2023-0048. Good morning. The case name is Trails Truck and Travel Plaza LLC versus Albert Lea Township, City of Albert Lea. To take a minute to get settled, I'll just go over a few preliminary things. As I'm sure you're probably familiar, you'll each have 15 minutes for your primary argument. Appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. We are recording the oral argument today, so it will be available on our website, usually within 24 hours. At the start of your argument, we ask that you please introduce yourself and the party you represent, and let us know if you have any preference for how we address you this morning. Also, the podium is adjustable, so feel free to adjust it if need be, and there is a timer clock on there so you can see how much time you have remaining. And with that, appellant, you can proceed when you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Robert Scott. I represent the appellant, the City of Albert Lea. The statute governing annexations in Minnesota that are made by agreement between cities and townships, which is section 414.0325, includes a provision that allows cities and townships to agree to limit the authority of the Office of Administrative Hearings to limit their jurisdiction if the joint resolution for orderly annexation satisfies certain criteria. That provision, which is found in subdivision 1H of section 414.0325, can be invoked by the parties if the joint resolution does three things. If it designates an area in the township as in need of orderly annexation to the city. Two, if it provides all of the conditions under which that area can be annexed to the city. And three, if it states that no consideration by the Office of Administrative Hearings by the Chief Administrative Law Judge is necessary. If those three criteria are satisfied, subdivision 1H then operates to impose what this court has recognized is a clear, legal, mandatory duty to order the annexation pursuant to the terms of the joint resolution within 30 days of receiving it.
So, counsel, that language seems clear, but then when you look at the rest of the statute, and I'm sure you'd agree that we read the statute as a whole, subdivision 2 also has language that seems to be clear that says upon receipt of a resolution for annexation of a part of the designated area, the Chief Administrative Law Judge shall set a time and place for a hearing in accordance with section 414.09. And as I understand your argument, basically you're arguing that that provision doesn't apply.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And how is that consistent with the plain language of that subdivision?
Construing the provisions to give effect to both, our position is that subdivision 1H would apply to those joint resolutions which satisfy the three criteria established in subdivision 1H, essentially serving as kind of an off-ramp from the requirement that you referenced in the other subdivision. Obviously, not every joint resolution will satisfy the three criteria of subdivision 1H, and for those joint resolutions, the hearing requirement and reference to the uniform procedures in section 414.09 would apply.
So what is the subdivision 2 talks about upon receipt of a resolution for annexation of a part of the designated area. So what does that refer to? Is that where there are boundary disputes, or what does that mean? Not being an expert in this area.
Thank you, Your Honor. There's several different ways that orderly annexation agreements can be structured. In our case, we have a relatively simple one where the parties defined four parcels and said these need to be immediately annexed, and required and agreed that upon submission to the Office of Administrative Hearings under Subdivision 1H, the annexation must be immediately ordered. other orderly annexation agreements might treat it differently. They might designate a large area and then establish a process through which individual parcels or subparts of the area designated could be annexed by whatever procedure the parties define. I believe that type of language that you referenced would be contemplating a situation like that, where there's a long-term agreement in effect under which there's a potential for multiple annexations to occur.
So is it your argument that subdivision two, that we're not dealing with that kind of a resolution or annexation of a part of a designated area? Or not? I'm just trying to figure out how to interpret subdivision two there.
Thank you. Our position is that the resolution satisfies the criteria in subdivision 1H, and essentially the parties, by satisfying those criteria and expressing the desire to limit OAH's jurisdiction, have invoked subdivision 1H to the exclusion of the other uniform provisions in subdivision 2 or elsewhere in Chapter 414.
So does that mean it's a different kind of resolution than the one referenced in subdivision 2 of 414.0325?
Yes, it does mean that. It means that because in this case, the resolution made specific reference to the standards in subdivision 1H and thus invoked the more streamlined, more efficient process by which the Office of Administrative Hearings was required to order the annexation, as it did, by the way. OAH understood the statute the same way the appellants do and ordered the annexation as it felt it was required to do within 30 days.
So just following up on Chief Judge Siegel's question, though, I think this isn't a situation where you have the latter type large area that's designated in a resolution, and the resolution provides a process for annexing pieces at different times, correct?
Correct.
The resolution here had specific parcels that were to be annexed all at the same time.
That is correct.
So does that, even if there wasn't the magic language to take it out of consideration from OAH, would subdivision 2 apply to the agreement at the resolution at issue here?
Our position is not that this is that OAH's jurisdiction was limited because it was for immediate annexation. Our position is that OAH's jurisdiction was limited because the parties consciously elected to limit it in their agreement,
okay,
as required by subdivision 1H. And if I can follow up to be clear, it is possible to have a type of agreement where there are multiple annexations for a larger area that also invokes subdivision 1H if those terms for the annexation are clearly defined and self-executing. And I would point the court to the City of Waite Park decision that we cited at page 8 of our principal brief.
And subdivision 2 also incorporates it provides for a time and place for a hearing in accordance with section 414.09, and that contemplates that the hearing would be within 30 to 60 days of receipt of the document by the chief administrative law judge that initiated the proceeding, the initiating document. So it's like it's physically impossible to hold the hearing prior to the time the order is to be issued to comply with both, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at. Would you agree with that?
We agree with that. And point just about Chapter 414 in general. Chapter 414 allows for multiple types of municipal boundary adjustments, whether incorporation, detachment, annexation by any number of mechanisms. For each type of boundary adjustment, it has sometimes multiple specific procedures that apply, depending on which criteria or establishing different criteria depending on the circumstances. And I think the error the district court made in its order reversing OAH's annexation order was in interpreting some uniform provisions that apply elsewhere in Chapter 414 is operating to rewrite every specific provision found within the different types of boundary adjustments. We've pointed in our reply brief to no fewer than 7 instances where the legislature, in establishing the different procedures for boundary adjustments, has expressly invoked the uniform hearing procedures in Chapter 414.09. What that tells us, and I believe this court has issued decisions consistent with this, is that there are procedures where a hearing is required and the legislature then invokes the uniform procedures in 414.09, but there are then obviously specific types of procedures when the criteria in the statute and the specific provisions are satisfied that do not require a hearing. And for those procedures, of which we are talking about one here with subdivision 1H in the orderly annexation statute, the uniform procedures would not apply.
So, can you explain why the administrative law judge talked about that the issues presented by Trails Travel would be best addressed in connection with appeal proceedings before the district court? So how does the district court get to weigh in, or is that just an errant comment by the ALJ?
No, I can't explain that comment. I think that just doesn't make sense. That gets to another issue in the appeal, which is what is the scope of the uniform appeal procedure in Chapter 414, which is in Chapter Section 414.07. And on that question, there's a standard in 414.07 that applies broadly to any appeal of any annexation order. But I would direct the court to the annexation of real property to the City of Bemidji case that we've cited at page 10 of our principal brief. And that, I think, answered this question, which is the scope of review in the district court on appeal from an annexation order from one of these specific procedures cannot be broader than the agency's authority in the first instance in reviewing the petition. In the Bemidji case, that dealt with an annexation by ordinance. That's another one of these specific procedures where if very specific criteria are satisfied, the need for this evidentiary hearing is, there is no need for it.
So it's the city's position that if we're looking at 414.07, that the order being reviewed by the district court is the order of the Office of Administrative Hearings, right? It doesn't deal with the merits of the underlying order.
That's
correct. Like saying, oh, this isn't in the best interest of the property owner. I'm not convinced as the district court judge. It's just what did the ALJ read the statute correctly, and in this case, were the 3 requirements of 1H satisfied? If they are, the district court's job is done. Is that right?
That's correct. That is the city's position. And I believe the City of Bemidji case that I referenced is a published decision from this court holding the same thing in the context of an annexation by ordinance, but that's another one of these procedures that avoids the need for an evidentiary hearing.
Under H, it says the chief administrative law judge may review and comment, but shall within 30 days order the annexation in accordance with the terms of the resolution. What is the purpose of the review and comment?
I guess my honest answer is I don't know, but obviously that's a permissive authority granted to OAH to make known any thoughts they have about the petition before them. But what is clear in that same subdivision is that whatever those comments may be, they still have a clear legal duty to order the annexation. And on that point, I do want to reference the City of Waite Park decision that I mentioned. That was unpublished, but it dealt with this exact issue. And in the City of Waite Park decision, that came before this court on appeal from a district court that had actually issued a writ of mandamus compelling OAH to order an annexation under one of these orderly annexation agreements that satisfied what at the time was subdivision 1G, but had identical language to subdivision 1H today. So the district court found there's 3 criteria for a writ of mandamus, one of which is there has to be absolutely no discretion for the state actor, that they have a clear legal duty to order the annexation. the district court found that it did under the terms of subdivision 1G, and this court upheld the district court's issuance of that writ. So this issue has been squarely before this court, and this court has resolved it in the manner the appellants propose it do so again today.
Doesn't appear there are any further questions. Do you, I'm sorry, do you have more? I thought you were concluding, but go ahead.
At this point, Your Honor, yes, I think I have a minute left. I'd reserve that for rebuttal if possible.
Certainly. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Molly Hamilton Cawley. I represent Respondent Trails Truck and Travel Plaza, LLC. I think it's important to start with where we agree, the parties, which is that when presented with a joint resolution that technically complies with MnSTAT 414.0325 subdivision 1H, the OAH must, within 30 days, order the annexation. That is a separate and distinct concept from whether my client has an opportunity to have a hearing in order to state their objections to the annexation, which is the only way they would have a meaningful opportunity for appeal under 414.07. And if you really, the only way to harmonize all these statutory provisions that arguably apply is to look at it in that manner. Yes, the annexation order has to be issued within 30 days. However,
isn't the right to the hearing in front of the city when they're adopting the resolution?
No, there's no evidentiary hearing. There is a public.
Well, not an evidentiary hearing, but a hearing. I mean, I'm assuming I didn't read I don't even know that it's in the record. The record from the city of Albert Lea when this resolution was adopted, but I assume there was a hearing and your client went and said, we oppose this because this is a rotten deal. We're using this land for dry storage. There was some misbegotten agreement long ago that doesn't apply to us or bind us. So now you're trying to punish us because you didn't get what you wanted before, right? And so that was an opportunity to be heard.
It's an opportunity to be heard. It's not, in our estimation, compliant with due process when you're talking.
Well, let's talk about due process, though.
Yes.
You know, I'm not clear on the property right that your client has that would give rise to a due process.
A property owner
protection
has,
in this case.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Because this case involves the boundaries of a municipality. It doesn't involve a taking of any property.
No, correct. It's not a taking. What it is my client has consistently argued that we are going to have increased taxes for no commensurate benefit.
That's separate from what municipality that your client's property is located in. They can challenge taxes and assessments. It has to benefit the property, so they can challenge the assessments using the very same arguments here. We're using this for dry storage. We don't need a frontage road. Not benefiting us. As a matter of fact, it's harming us because there's more traffic or something. I mean, I don't know. But that's separate. I mean, where's the prop? I mean, you're talking about constitutional due process, and as Judge Cochran pointed out, your client has to have a property interest then in being unincorporated versus within the boundaries of the city of Albert Lea. And where is that property interest? That's, I think, what we're trying to get to.
Yes, and the property interest is that by becoming within those boundaries, there are increased taxes. And in the record, there is 100.
Yeah, but that's separate, though. I mean, nobody has the right to not, you do not have a property right not to be taxed.
Correct, but you
I
do.
I mean, if they're duly, you know, blah, blah, blah. But that's a separate legal issue from which municipal boundaries that your property is going to be located in. So what's the property interest in being, you know, unincorporated, setting aside the taxes now, setting aside that there may be assessments? That's a separate issue and separately challengeable. So just like what municipality you're in, aside from taxes and aside from potential future assessments.
I don't know how to separate the tax issue given 414.07, because what you are allowed, an aggrieved person is allowed to challenge, is whether the annexation order is arbitrary, whether it's oppressive, and whether it's not in the best interests of the affected area.
But if that's not something that the administrative law judge under statute is allowed to consider, then that is not a ground then on which, I mean, it sets out a whole bunch of grounds on which something can be appealed. But if, as I understand the city of Albert Lea's argument, is that they're saying if we comply with the four corners of 1H, with those three things, then OAH is limited in its, actually, it can't even review that, I guess. It has to issue, it could comment and say, wait a minute, I don't think the requirements of 1H are met here. And then the appeal right is just, was 1H complied with or not? And so there's a whole smorgasbord in 414 point whatever it is, the right to appeal section. But it doesn't mean that they all apply. I mean, or why? What is your argument for why they do all apply when the administrative law judge could not look at or assess all of those things?
Well, I want to just be clear that the city of Albert Lea's position has never been in the briefing that we don't have the right to appeal under 414.07.
I'm just saying on what grounds the district court gets to consider, not whether there's clearly a right to appeal. I'm sorry for being unclear in my question.
Okay, well, I think we have to step back again. There's a review process, and then there's a hearing. So what 1H truncates, if you will,
well,
is...
Well, you assume there's a hearing, but that's what we're here to talk about, right?
Well, I'm trying to explain the statutory analysis.
Okay. First of all, in your view, is the statute unambiguous or ambiguous as to whether a hearing is required?
I believe it's unambiguous. I think if we have to get into an ambiguity, the presumption is going to be that the legislature intended for it to be constitutional, meaning my client would have some meaningful forum in which to say, we object to this, and here's why, and which is the only way you're going to have a meaningful appeal, which we've all agreed my client does get an appeal under 414.07. So what I'm trying to say is there's two parts. Subdivision 3 of 414.0325 talks about if you don't have that magic language, here's the factors that the OAH gets to consider, the ALJ gets to consider. What 1H says is, no, you don't get to review and you don't have discretion. It does not say that you don't get to, an aggrieved party doesn't get to have a hearing. And I want to make very clear that those seven instances that counsel pointed out as exceptions from the uniform procedures are where there is no objection. It is where all property owners and the municipalities have agreed that either detachment or annexation or incorporation is appropriate. It's not coincidental to me that the hearing procedures always apply when someone objects. And that goes back to the idea of due process and your in the constitutional rights. And so I think that's an important thing to realize as you read through.
Well,
and we're looking at the statute as a whole. We're not just looking at 414.0325 subdivision 1H, which is the city kind of asked the court to myopically focus on that. But it's an entire statute of which there are... there's multiple.
But they apply where someone objects when a different type of process is used, not where it's an orderly annexation where it's already gone before both municipalities or the township and a municipality and there's an agreement.
No, many of the statutes have the public hearing the notice and the public hearing requirement, and there is still a judicial or a hearing in front of the ALJ. So I don't believe that's actually...
But the legislature here has basically said the ALJ doesn't get to weigh in if the resolution includes that language.
The ALJ doesn't get to review, which would mean it can't consider the factors and then decide under three.
The ALJ may review and comment, but the ALJ doesn't decide it based on the factors. You agree with that, right?
Yes, we agree that the annexation order, if it meets the technical requirements, has to be issued. The next step.
So what is the purpose of a hearing before an ALJ then?
In order to actually be able to put in evidence to support the appeal,
but
we have
the appeal is based on whether or not the order meets the requirements of the statute, or the resolution meets the requirements of the statute.
No, that's not what 414.07 says. It says, was the annexation order arbitrary, fraudulent, oppressive?
But you have to look at the specific order and the statutory basis for the order and apply it. I mean, 414.07 is a broad appeal provision, right?
For an aggrieved person,
or
yes.
Under Chapter 414, right?
Correct.
It's not specific to 414.0325. So you have to read it in the context of the order that's being appealed.
To follow that to its logical conclusion is that a binding joint resolution, which is the statute is clear is only binding on the parties, would preclude my client from making any objections to the annexation. And that's just not in any kind of forum that would have any meaningful opportunity to present evidence and or to have any meaningful opportunity to the appeal to the district court.
Well, your client could present objections to the municipality or the township, mm-hmm. correct? Before they enter into a resolution.
There's
an opportunity there.
Certainly, it's not a fact-finding procedure. It's merely stating your objections just like any other member of the public could, but not every other member of the public is going to be taxed $130,000 more because for property that it doesn't use for, and it won't be using any of the services. The case law says you cannot arbitrarily just bring in property to source revenue or to, because you want to have a better tax base. And this is the procedure in which you would make those arguments because that's what the appeal process says. It says, was it arbitrary? Was it, is it not in the best interest of the affected property? Absent some kind of hearing where you can have those evidentiary issues at least raised. I'm not saying it changes the annexation order. What it does do is creates an order from the hearing that allows substantive review on appeal to the district court. Otherwise, it's a rubber stamp the entire way, and my client has no forum in which to address these arguments that implicate due process, because it is well established that if you're going to get taxed, you're entitled to notice in a hearing.
So, counsel?
But that's Go ahead.
Go ahead. You don't have a lot of time left, as I see the clock counting down. I think a two-part question. One is, so you in your brief noted that there was, instead of a hearing, you don't call it a hearing, the OAH had an informal telephone conference, and the order had permitted the parties to file letter briefs articulating their position as to whether the annexation should be approved and any other documentation they wish to have considered. Why is that not sufficient to constitute a hearing for the purpose of 07, I think is what we were referring to, where it says there's a hearing. It doesn't specify that it has to be an evidentiary hearing. And if it does, or if you have any authority for the fact that it has to be an evidentiary hearing, if you could point us to that, that would be helpful.
Certainly. Well, I think I'm going to answer that in two parts. The first part being that the ALJ's order noted that there was no opportunity to take testimony or have fact-finding, and that she was deferring to the district court for what the ALJ understood the statute to provide, which is a full and fair opportunity to be heard. So I just want to make that clear.
I don't see that language in the order saying that they, no, I understand she said that the district court would have the opportunity to address those cases, but I don't understand where, I guess I didn't see where they said that they understood the provision to require there be an evidentiary hearing.
Well, I think it's, I mean, it's implicit in the fact that she says that you're entitled to a full and fair opportunity, or you're entitled to a full and fair opportunity to be heard, but that's best done in front of the district court, and that this forum didn't provide that to you. I mean, I think that's implicit in the order, and the ALJ specified, I didn't allow you to essentially present any evidence or testimony to support your position.
What occurred with provision of arguments and documentation to support it, why wasn't that sufficient?
Well, it's not sufficient. From our standpoint, there are due process implications to this annexation proceeding, and that's not a forum under, you know, the Juster Brothers case is very clear that just because it's an administrative proceeding, you're still, your due process rights allow you to have a fact-finding hearing. Sometimes the rules of evidence are truncated, the rules of civil procedure are truncated in administrative proceedings, but you still have your due process rights to be heard. Our position would be an informal telephone conference where you get 3 days to try to just pull together a letter is not going to meet that requirement. So I think that answers your question, but I really can't answer it without the reference to due process.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
I have one more question for you. So I just so I'm clear, the authority for a hearing in your view comes from subdivision 2 of 414.0325.
Well, it also comes from both 414.09, which says in all...
Well, that's incorporated by reference into subdivision 2.
And then 414.12, which was amended in 2008, allows for... says the... Chief.
That's a general provision about the chief ALJ.
Correct. And the only exceptions that are noted are, again, the ones where there was no objection or the parties were in full agreement about the detachment, annexation, or incorporation. I appreciate the court's time and all the questions.
Thank you. Do you have any quick summary you want to, closing
Certainly,
comment?
Yeah, if I'm allowed. I would just ask that the court affirm the district court's order and that we would allow a remand to the OAH for that fact-finding hearing, again, we just ask for an affirmance in that regard.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you.
Any rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. Chapter 414 establishes the scope of a orderly annexation under subdivision 1H. That's the crux of our appeal. The respondents' appeal to the district court and arguments to this court supporting the district court's order can start from the presumption that the respondent must have meaningful rights to participate in this annexation proceeding. And the city's position is that the legislature simply does not provide that right to respondents in this case. The protection that the legislature has conferred upon owners of property within an area designated for orderly annexation when subdivision 1H is invoked is that if the property owners did not initiate the process by petitioning, the parties must publish public notice, the parties being the city and the township, must public notice alerting the public to the fact that they are considering a joint resolution to designate property. That gives the property owner in the affected area the right to observe and participate in the local governmental decision before the joint resolution is agreed to. From that point forward, again, if the parties have elected to limit OAH's jurisdiction under 1H, the OAH jurisdiction is limited. They must order the annexation within 30 days, as respondent appears to concede.
Counsel, let's talk about the appeal rights, though, under 414.07 and subdivision 2 lists the grounds for appeal. You would agree that they have a right, any aggrieved person has a right to appeal an order, even if it was you know, issued pursuant to subdivision 1H of 0.0325.
We agree that the property owner is an interested person and has the right to appeal, but that's a separate and distinct question from what is the scope of the appeal. And the City of Bemidji decision that I referenced and is in our brief, I think answers the question, which is the appeal cannot be broader than the scope of OEH's jurisdiction in issuing the order in the first place. So had
so
the
you would, it's your view that on an appeal, this property owner couldn't argue that the order granting the annexation was unreasonable in disregard of the best interests of the affected property?
Our position is that that specific part of 414.07 does not apply in this case or in any case where the annexation procedure does not allow for that issue to be considered by OAH. And the City of Bemidji decision from this court is consistent with that.
So it's your argument that the appeal could be on grounds one. Two or four, but not three if it's a 1H, just 414.03251H.
Correct.
I mean, I don't, it's okay.
Yep.
So it, I'm sorry, are you? I didn't
no,
mean
no,
to
you,
see,
you, were,
I
you were
to
going to the
a different topic.
That's fine, go ahead. Yes,
okay,
thank you.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I was always told I interrupt too much when I was in grade school, so I'm sorry. So if the only motivation for the City of Albert Lea to annex this particular parcel was so it can collect property taxes, isn't that an improper motive? I mean, shouldn't they be able to challenge that?
Your Honor, they can challenge the imposition of the taxes or the assessments. And in fact, I would note they have. There's a district court action pending in Fribourg County where the respondents have challenged the city's special assessments. I mean, that's, I think, a case in point that this annexation proceeding doesn't implicate their property rights. The special assessments do, and there's separate process provided there. But the legislature has said when the city and the township agree on where the boundary should be and whether parcels should come into the city from the township and they invoke subdivision 1H, that's okay. That's the end of the story, essentially. Again, the respondent's appeal starts from the premise that there must be due process rights for their client to participate in this proceeding at OAH. And the city's position is there are no such due process rights. There is no property interest implicated by the city's annexation, by the moving of the jurisdictional boundary between the city and the township. That does not implicate any or harm in any way any property interest that the owner of this property has. For that reason, Your Honor, I see I'm out of time. We would respectfully request that this court reverse the district court's order and reinstate the order for annexation issued by the Office of Administrative Hearings. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you to both counsel for your helpful briefs and arguments here today. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our opinion within the statutory time frame.